Here it is!
From deep inside your radio.
It's in a name anyway. Ladies and gentlemen, from Santa Monica, California, celebrating the end of several consecutive days of sunshine, this broadcast comes to you. And this is, ladies and gentlemen, the rally to stay home. And we're all here. And there was no traffic. Interesting. Ladies and gentlemen, the converted Boeing 747 equipped with a powerful laser, that is one of our fine pieces of the missile defense system. Well, I don't know how to tell you this. It failed to shoot down the Mach enemy ballistic missile, the system's second botched flight test in a row. So if any enemy is listening, don't you start firing missiles at us until we're ready, okay? Because when this thing works, preliminary indications are the so-called airborne laser test bed tracked the target's exhaust plume, but did not hand off to a second active tracking system as a prelude to firing the high-powered chemical laser, says a missile defense spokesman. That's right. We have a spokesman at the Missile Defense Agency. The transition didn't happen, he said. Therefore, the high-energy lasing did not occur. All right. Now, don't you enemies be listening to this. I'm sure it'll work when you... And now, ladies and gentlemen, news of Afghan President Hamid Karzai. He's our guy. Karzai, our guy, was fuming this week over a NATO drug raid in eastern Afghanistan that netted over one ton of heroin and opium worth over $250 million. A joint Russian and DEA operation destroyed four drug labs and disrupted a huge drug production base near the Pakistan border. Karzai, our guy, demanded an explanation from NATO for carrying out the raid without his government's permission. So he could warn his brother the drug...
No, he didn't say that. Why would...
It was a historic and unprecedented collaboration on the part of U.S. and Russia. Speaking of which, you know, the pro-war people in this country always say, why doesn't he talk about victory? Okay, so I'll give you somebody who talked this week about victory. Former Soviet President Mikhail Gorbachev, who said victory in Afghanistan is impossible. See, he talked about victory. Afghanistan is the world's largest producer of heroin. Russian officials have continuously lambasted the United States for not doing enough to halt the production of the drug in Afghanistan, suggesting the U.S. was abetting the drug trade in an effort to weaken Russia. But not pleased was Karzai, our guy. And also in Afpakian news, the intense U.S. military campaign aimed at crippling the Taliban has so far failed to inflict more than fleeting setbacks or put meaningful pressure on its leaders to seek peace. That's according to U.S. military and intelligence officials, citing the latest assessments of the war. They spoke anonymously, of course, to the Washington Post. And Asia Times reports that the talks with the Taliban have ended already. So there's the pressure right there. Escalated airstrikes and special operations raids have disrupted Taliban movements, but officials said insurgents have been adept at absorbing the blows. They feel confident, the insurgents, that they can outlast the troop buildup set to build down next July. The insurgency seems to be maintaining its resilience, said a senior Defense Department official. Taliban elements have consistently shown an ability to reestablish and rejuvenate. If there is a sign the momentum has shifted, said the official, quote, I don't see it. Well, babe, better look harder. Hello, welcome to the show.
While standing at the junction on 42nd Street, I idly kick a pebble lying there. Imagine my surprise. Thought I'd left it at home, yeah. But there's no doubt about it, it's mine. Oh. I sunk my teeth into it. Thought I'd bust my head. Oh, I dashed to the dentist. Hey, hey, I got an awful pain. This man looks in my mouth and screams. This boy's insane. Imagine my surprise.
From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, from the world headquarters of this broadcast, I'm Harry Shearer welcoming you to this edition of the show. Ladies and gentlemen, we're not number one. We're not number one. Come on, everybody at the rally, to stay home. Repeat after you want to. We're not number one. The 15th annual Transparency International Report is out. Mine landed in the sprinklers. Damn it. Damn that kid. The report on corruption perceptions around the world, ranking nations from the least corrupt to, that's right, the most corrupt. Stay with me now. Because of financial scandals,
what?
The United States dropped out of the top 20 least corrupt nations for the first time since the list began. Financial scandals? I didn't hear about those. What the? The United States fell from 19th place to 22nd place behind Chile. Well, they got a sympathy vote for the miners. That's all that was, ladies and gentlemen. That's so transparent. And we're still not number one. A Chinese scientific research center has built the fastest supercomputer ever made, replacing the United States as maker of the swiftest machine, giving China bragging rights as a technology superpower. The computer known as Tianhe 1A has 1.4 times the horsepower of the current top computer at a national lab in Tennessee, based on the standard test that they basically build these computers to. It's like it's teaching to the test. That's all it is. Don't worry about it. We don't have to be number one, do we? Really? And now,
he's not a general.
He commands no troops.
He's not an inspector.
He peeks at no stoops.
He's an inspector general.
Oh, yeah. You know, 22 is good. That's a good number. That's a good number to be, isn't it? That's a fine number. That's That's one of the best. That's one of the best numbers. Ladies and gentlemen, before news of the inspectors general, and there's plenty of it this week, this, dear Harry, just as lovers of law and sausage should not watch either being made, so those who rely on facts within inspector general reports should not witness their genesis. As an accountant in the Department of Defense, they have those. I've worked all too closely with defense and Navy auditors for nearly 30 years. Almost as a rule, the reports are either hyperbole bordering on perjury designed to justify the budgets of the audit services, or Pollyanna-ish suggestions utterly familiar to the auditees but made unfeasible by a scarcity of time, money, or brain resources. This state of affairs prevails as the cream of the accountant crop is put into operations while the whey gravitates toward the audit office, a situation that serves management admirably. I understand that IG reports made good tabloid reading, but beware. They're less frequently National Enquirer and more often Weekly World News. Signed, please don't say my name. All right, with that as a caveat, let's dive in. The U.S. has spent billions of dollars on reconstruction projects in Afghanistan, much of it on private contractors who do everything from train Afghan security forces to build schools. Now, more than 8 years into the war, the government office in charge of tracking these projects has issued its first major report, concluding, any guesses? Come on. Billions of dollars have been spent. No one knows for sure what the money has bought. Who would have? Between 2007-2009, U.S. government paid $18 billion to 7,000 contractors doing reconstruction work. Patrick Peterson, who wrote the report for the Special Inspector General for Afghanistan Reconstruction, says the big problem is that the agencies doling out those funds, the Pentagon and the State Department, don't have a clear way to track the spending. There are contractors who provide food and meal service for our troops. That's not easily distinguishable from a contract to build a road, conduct a police training, or conduct an anti-drug operation, Peterson says. That's the challenge. Anthony Cordesman of the Center for Strategic and International Studies says it's no obscure accounting challenge. U.S. contracting problems have huge consequences. Has it seriously jeopardized our ability to win the war? He asks himself, and then he says the answer is yes. Not being able to track reconstruction dollars means not knowing if projects designed to win over the Afghan people are working. At the same time, lax U.S. contracting rules have in some ways actually fueled parts of the insurgency. Hey, might as well give to both sides. You never know who's going to win. That's the rule of political lobbying, usually. A new report from the State Department Inspector General's office found that a private security firm in Afghanistan hired more than 400 Nepalese nationals, can I say that on the radio, who lacked training and English language skills to protect the U.S. Embassy in Kabul. According to the group, according to the report, Armor Group of North America, AGNA, was awarded a contract from the Department of State to protect the embassy. So far, $97.5 million. The IG office found that while staff of 1,600 personnel at the Kabul embassy have been kept safe, the people who were hired to protect them were subpar. Nepalese nationals hired with no background investigations, little or no training, spoke little English, and many had little or no skill with firearms. In addition, and probably a good idea given just what I said, Armor Group did not supply the guards with weapons for more than 2 years, although it was contractually committed to do so. But an estimated 100 U.S. weapons are unaccounted for or missing. Still, bomb-sniffing dogs hired by a subcontractor at Armor Group were not using the right procedures for explosives detection. Sit first, then. Auditors estimate Armor Group, a part of Wackenhut, could be penalized $8 million. Yep, I'm betting. But that's not all. U.S. government auditors examining Afghan construction projects have found serious problems with a crucial part of the plan to bolster the security forces. McClatchy Newspapers obtained an upcoming report by the Special Inspector General for Afghan Reconstruction saying six police stations in a dangerous stretch of southern Afghanistan were so poorly constructed by the Afghan contractor that they can't be occupied. Conditions at the stations are so hazardous that inadequate concrete and foundation work calls into question the structural integrity of the buildings and raises the risk of total building collapse in the event of a significant earthquake. Why didn't they have the Army Corps of Deadline Washington, the U.S. federal prison industry that recycled computers and other electronics violated health, safety, and environmental laws, according to a scathing report by the Justice Department Office of Inspector General. the e-waste recycling conducted by Federal Prison Industries, known by its trade name Unicor, committed numerous instances of staff misconduct and performance failures, including endangering staff and inmates, dishonesty, and theft and dereliction of duty. In all, we concluded 11 Unicorn Bureau of Prisons employees committed either misconduct or performance failures in their work. Potential criminal conduct by Bureau of Prisons and Unicorn staff. There's no such thing as a Unicorn. I know that. In the long tradition of prison labor, these organizations employed inmates with hammers, but instead of rocks, they were breaking computer components with no containment or protective equipment, said Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility director, whose organization aided the inspector general. Coated in toxic dust, prison staff and inmates worked for years, in many cases trailing heavy metals back to their homes and cell blocks. The kids love heavy metals. The Homeland Security Department's internal watchdog is unable to verify federal money for an immigration enforcement program that the money was spent as Congress intended. Nice writing. According to its report, Congress gave Immigration and Customs Enforcement $11 million in the last 2 years to allow local law enforcement officers to enforce federal immigration laws. But when it tried to confirm its expenditures, says the IG's office, it was unable to get documents to back up spending. There's more. Illinois' weatherization program suffers from poor workmanship, inflated material costs, and inadequate inspections, according to the Department of Energy's Inspector General. And, stop me if you've heard this one before, the FBI effort to move from paper to electronic files took another hit this week when the Justice Department Inspector General's office issued its latest, most critical report on the long-troubled Sentinel project. Just go to the Mac store or to, you know, call Bill Gates. What are you guys doing? Sentinel is approximately $100 million over budget and 2 years behind schedule, still lacks common features of personal computers and ordinary word processing software, such as search functions. Why would the FBI want that? Spell checking and automatic document saves. Worse, says the IG, the FBI has spent almost 90% of the $450 million currently budgeted for the entire program, but it will have delivered only two of the program's four phases to its agents and analysts. Those phases would be, what, plugging in and starting up? No, sorry, going ahead and plugging in and going ahead and starting up. The project could cost another $350 million and take six more years to complete, says the IG. FBI agents and analysts do not have the planned expanded capabilities to search the FBI's case files, nor can they use Sentinel to manage evidence. What can they do? Because the system lacked an autosave capability, several users lost partially completed forms and hours of work while using Sentinel. Users also found the lack of an integrated spell checker unacceptable because most current word processing software includes this feature, says the report. The FBI now says it's mended its ways, throwing out approaches that hadn't worked and instituting new ways to get the mission accomplished. The IG found that a pilot program the FBI launched to test elements of the system earned failing grades. The auditors did not sound impressed. It may be too late to keep refining Sentinel. Sentinel's technical requirements are now 6 years old, the IG's office says. And there have been significant advances in technology and changes in the FBI's work processes during that time. The FBI needs to carefully reassess whether there are new, less costly ways of achieving the functionality described in Sentinel's original requirements, i.e., go to the Mac store or call Bill Gates. And this got most of the coverage this week of any IG report. The Treasury Department's recent prediction that taxpayers will lose far less than expected on the bailout of AIG could prove far too optimistic. It relies on different methodology than previous estimates or the methodology that the Treasury Department had previously made public in its vow of transparency. The estimate could also lowball the return for taxpayers, depending on how AIG stock performs. This according to the Inspector General for the TARP program. The report complained that Treasury's recent loss estimate, $5 billion, far below previous estimates, does not account for the volatility in AIG stock. The same report, although this was less publicized, was highly critical of the administration's home affordability mortgage program, the attempt to try to help homeowners modify their mortgages. This mortgage mess, ladies and gentlemen, keep an eye on it, this foreclosure thing. It's going to be big. It's going to be bigger than, it's going to be like a big rally, bigger than that. Says the IG of the program, 728,600 struggling homeowners have been kicked out of the program. Just 640,000 remain. Through the first 9 months of this year, when the program has been at its apex, nearly 2.7 million homes have been subject to foreclosure notices. At that pace, foreclosure notices will have been sent to more than 3.5 million homes by the end of the year, nearly five times the comparable number in 2006. A lot of people who signed up for the program got temporary modifications, so we're told to suspend paying their mortgages during the temporary modification period, then were denied permanent modifications, and were charged, yes, late fees and penalties on the payments they'd been told not to make. It's making homeownership affordable by getting you out. News of the Inspectors General, ladies and gentlemen. Copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Now it's clean, it's safe, it's cheap, it's too paper to fifer. Florida Power and Light employees have found a hole in the steel liner of a nuclear reactor containment building at Turkey Point, near Homestead, you know, near Homestead. A hole in the containment liner. That couldn't... Florida Power and Light says the rusty. Good. That's a good sign. Always a good sign. A rusty quarter-sized hole and a 30-inch section of corrosion. Corrosion were found during an inspection while the reactor was shut down for refueling. It wasn't shut down for inspection. They just happened to inspect it while it was shut down for refueling. The quarter-inch thick liner is designed to protect any release of radiation if the reactor fails. So you wouldn't want, really, to have a hole or corrosion in it, really, would you? The company says the damage is being repaired, and it did not affect the health of the public or the plant's workers. The U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission will not release a violation notice to the Davis-Bessie Nuclear Power Station in Ohio. They issued a final report this week regarding the investigation of cracks in nozzles and welds in the reactor head. That couldn't hurt anybody, could it? They were found in March. In September, representatives from the Nuclear Regulatory Commission and First Energy Nuclear Operating Company, they got to be good. They're First, held a meeting about the issue. An NRC leader said First Energy employees had not done anything wrong except for not being aware of how a higher than normal temperature on the reactor head could cause primary water stress corrosion cracking in the nozzles and welds holding them in place. Aside from that, Mrs. Lincoln, they were right up to the... Those cracks have been repaired. Staff has reviewed your root cause analysis of the event and has concluded this equipment failure could have been reasonably avoided, or no, could not have been reasonably avoided or detected by your quality assurance program or other related control measures, said the director of Division of Reactor Safety. So nobody could have known. And that's supposed to be reassuring. You know what? I'm going to choose to be reassured. That's exactly what I'm going to do, because that's how I am. And... Deadline Tallahassee, Progress Energy Florida, they got to be good. They're Progress. Can keep billing customers at a slightly lower rate for another year for a nuclear power plant that might never be built. Well, that's why it's so cheap. The Public Service Commission unanimously agreed to let the utility recover $163 million in nuclear plant construction costs from customers this year, down from $206 million. Next year, down from $206 million this year. Residential customers... will pay about $5 per 1,000 kilowatt hours. Consumer advocates asked the commission to discontinue the fee until the company decides whether to build the nuclear plant. We've not committed to that, said the spokeswoman for Progress. No decision will be made until the company gets a federal license in late 2012, but send the money in the meantime. The commission's decision confirms the state's commitment to state-of-the-art nuclear power as a strategic asset, says the spokesperson for Progress. The legislature in Florida passed a law in 2006 that lets nuclear utilities begin charging customers for nuclear plant costs during construction. Costs for conventional plants cannot be recovered until they're completed. You see, it's clean, it's safe, it's safe, it's safe, it's safe, it's a meter. Ladies and gentlemen, this made the news. After accusing his girlfriend of cheating on him, a Nebraska man allegedly tied the woman to a couch in their apartment and waterboarded her, according to police. 22-year-old Trevor Case has been charged with domestic assault, false imprisonment, and making terroristic threats in connection with the bizarre incident. Police allege he stuffed hospital socks into Danielle Stallworth's mouth, bound her wrists with belts and hair ties before placing a shirt over her head and dousing it with water. She started freaking out and thought she wasn't able to breathe, said the police. He claimed a scratch on his chest occurred while, quote, wrestling with a friend. Yeah, that worked for OJ. So he gets arrested and charged with domestic assault, false imprisonment, and making terroristic threats. When, as we all know, there's nothing really wrong with waterboarding at all.
Well, it may not be legal, but it sure as heck makes me safer. And it may not yield useful intel, at least that's what they say. But it's a pleasure so rare, seeing captives gulp air. Let's go waterboarding, USA. Let's go. It's not torture if I say it ain't. Those conventions are so old. Surfing, 'cause you can't get off if you want to. And it's really hard work, but for us it feels much more like play. If the tables were turned, we'd feel really burned. But let's go water.
This is Le Show from the home of the homeless. Ladies and gentlemen, news of the godly. Attorneys for nearly 150 people who claim sexual abuse. No, we read that last week, didn't I? Did I? I can't remember. Maybe you remember. Who cares? Father Sam is going to jail in Cleveland for one day. The Reverend Samuel R. Ciccolini, the beloved Roman Catholic priest from Akron, who headed Interval Brotherhood Home for 4 decades, was sentenced by U.S. District Judge James Gwynn to a single day in jail for income tax and bank fraud. He's placed on probation for 3 years, fined $350,000, and ordered to repay $3.5 million to the foundation, saying he believed the priest embezzled at least that much a day for $3.5 million embezzlement. Ciccolini has accumulated a trust fund worth about $5 million. I am profoundly sorry for what I did in the past. My intentions were good, Ciccolini said. He had pleaded guilty to one count of structuring financial transactions to evade reporting requirements and one count of making and subscribing to a false tax return. His plea agreement called for a potential sentence of 18 to 24 months. The average sentence in such cases is 22 months. His actual sentence, a day. Authorities have said the priest accumulated more than $1 million through bequests and other personal gifts over his religious career. He deceived the foundation by billing it for construction work and equipment that had been donated, falsifying invoices and financial records, and issuing false checks, authorities say. The foundation didn't want to pursue charges. The Akron community was shocked. Ciccolini maintains his status as a priest, of course, but he's been placed on administrative leave, where he cannot molest checking accounts. And more than half of Chicago's Roman Catholic parishes have had a priest accused of sexually abusing a child working there at some point. According to a study released recently, quickly questioned, though, by the Chicago Archdiocese, in some cases, multiple priests accused of misconduct worked at the same church, according to the study. News of the Godly. Copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Did I copyright that yet? I don't remember. So much to copyright, so little time. Ladies and gentlemen, there's in all the campaign noise, there's a controversy that attracted my attention this week. Reports that, confirmed by a spokesperson for former President Bill Clinton, that Clinton thought he had a deal to get Kendrick Meek, the Democratic candidate for U.S. Senator in Florida, to pull out of the race because he's running a distant third, well, not that distant, he's sort of neck and neck, with the independent former Republican governor, Charlie Crist. The Republican Tea Party candidate, Marco Rubio, is way ahead, and the theory being that if Meek pulled out, his votes would go to Crist, making it less likely that Rubio might win. Meek denies any such deal happened. He's defiantly announced he's staying in the race. Clinton is campaigning, of course, for numerous, usually he's campaigning for Democratic candidates rather than trying to get them to pull out of races. But across the country, he's the most effective campaigner this final weekend that the Democrats can muster nationally. An interesting tidbit came out about him and his former nemesis this week, former House Majority Leader Dick Armey. And that's what this country needs right now, is a good Dick Armey. Dick Armey told a magazine interviewer that he had found out that President Clinton and Newt Gingrich, during Clinton's administration, often got together to smoke cigars, drink wine, and talk about their girlfriends, since both were discovered to be having affairs while married. Yes, it sounds like another episode of Clinton Something next here on the show.
Clinton Something, the State Department years.
Well, hon, it is a little late here. What time is it where you are?
Oh, God, it's half past noon. Mm. But this is fascinating, Bill, because in a way, Kyrgyzstan is the key to our whole AFPAC policy framework.
Uh-oh. They got my gal talking policy frameworks. Somebody's gone native at Foggy Bottom.
You don't think I'd rather be sitting here in the presidential suite of a hotel that barely has electricity, waiting to try to do business with somebody who has his enemies dipped in vats of acid, than be the target of the crap that's being dumped on Obama's head?
Oh, they wouldn't have been half as rough on you, babe.
Are you kidding?
Damn straight I'm not. Wouldn't dare to do that to a woman.
Oh, because American men are so chivalrous.
No, because the only thing that scares American white men more than angry American black men is angry American women.
Well, anyway, before I even got here, Holbrooke was trying to run his own little game with the president of Kyrgyzstan. I wouldn't have even known about it if the ambassador wasn't married to one of my own campaign aides from upstate. Well, So I'm still 2 hours from landing when I get a cable from him, the ambassador. And he's sitting in his office, smoking a cigar, and talking to Newt Gingrich. And
come on, Newt. Just light one up for old time's sake.
No, sir, no can do. Callista would clamor me.
You finally found one that whipped you, huh? Well, that's what happens when you keep dumping them and marrying the next one.
Oh, no, this one's for keeps, Bill. At least until after 2012.
Nah, she's got you into that Catholic thing. You're not leaving this one in mid-chemo.
Huh? Probably not, my friend.
Mm-mm.
But after all that time sowing my wild oats, I do tend to think it's harvest time.
Man, you stop sowing your wild oats, the only thing you're going to end up with is oatmeal.
No, we're very busy showing the movie, selling the books. I finally found my true intellectual soulmate. We're like the Tofflers.
Or the Bonos.
But, my friend, in the category of loving them, leaving them, at least when I dump them, they stay dumped. You couldn't even get Kendrick Meek out of a Senate race cleanly. You used to have halfway decent chops.
Man, you always did underestimate me.
Oh, I'd never underestimate a man with a global initiative. Me, I'm just trying to restore a country, but you...
Listen, bud, you're more of a Kenyan anti-colonialist than the guy you're trying to replace, but you really think I just blundered into Florida, tried to persuade our own candidate into pulling out of the race, and just couldn't get the deal done? Doesn't sound like me, does it?
I'm not supposed to, but what's that you're drinking?
I'm really not supposed to. It's prune juice and seltzer.
Hmm. No, it doesn't sound like you. Mm. What sounds like you is leaking just enough to make the party's operation look clumsy and desperate, which makes a certain Secretary of State look mature and professional by comparison.
Rinse and weep, my friend. If you achieve your and your wife's wildest dreams, you'll be running against my missus. Good luck with that.
Oh, well, now who's underestimating whom? The 2012 race is going to be about something your missus seems to lack. A set of ideas so profound they can set the American soul ablaze again. Ideas that Callista and I even now are writing up for our next book. Hannity's already written the cover blurb.
See, that's where you're wrong. She's got a whole policy framework. The only problem is that Holbrooke
kicked them off, including the people they were trying to kill.
Uh-huh. Well, that is far out. And not just because it's in a time zone nobody else I know's ever been in. Look, Toots, I'm tired. I'm fried. I got a bunch of Democrats to rescue tomorrow.
All right, hon. I should put on something frumpy to meet the president.
Mm.
Talk to you soon.
Yeah. Call me when you're back in a country we can spell.
Youthful angst and middle-aged lust for power. Together they add up to Clinton something. The State Department years.
Sunshine around here. I don't know about without you, I get so sick of blue skies wherever they always appear. And I sure love the sound of the rain pouring down on my carport roof made out of tin. If there's a flood, then there's gonna be mudslides. We all have to pay for our sin. And I suppose that they'll close canyon roads and the freeways will all start to clog. Whole town's a dump. We came out here to dump all our dreams of making it big, but we're stuck in a singular nightmare. That's just how it seems. And I suppose Maury David sure knows all those cars we drive heat up our earth and sea temperatures rise. Brush fires can sure curb your mirth. Brad Gray's in L.A., yeah, okay, I should stay here. There's no place that's better, I know, for a wannabe star stuck in a car on a freeway with nowhere to go. When it's gray in L.A., I sure like it that way, 'cause there's way too much sunshine.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Special campaign edition. I've stayed away from political apologies till now because they just seem too numerous. And now, man, nothing but. Well, Google apologized for collecting unencrypted Wi-Fi data using its Street View car this week. The doctor whose in vitro treatments resulted in the Octomom's octuplets apologized for implanting her with 12 embryos. A Vancouver Canucks forward, Rick Rypien, apologized for grabbing a fan during a game. And there's another Vancouver apology, which we may get to. But then let's get to the political apologies, because there's... And the Chilean president apologized for writing a message linked to Nazism in the guest book of German President Christian Wolff. But now let's get to the... there is the Maldives Island wedding apology. You have to hear this. The leader of the Maldives has promised strict new guidelines in conducting wedding ceremonies for tourists after a couple who were renewing vows were abused. Police have detained a celebrant who called the foreign couple infidels during the luxury ceremony. Footage of the ceremony has gone viral on YouTube. The President Nasheed, urged all those working in the Indian Ocean Island holiday resorts to be vigilantly professional.
Sorry.
And they apologized for the celebrant explaining the ceremony in English before everyone stands. He then uses the intonating style of prayers to unleash a torrent of abuse in the Divadhi tongue on the couple, who smile shyly, unaware of what is being said. What is being said is, your marriage is not a valid one. You are not the kind of people who can have a valid marriage. One of you is an infidel. You fornicate and make a lot of children. Most of the children that you have are marked with spots and blemishes. These children that you have are bastards. Mm-hmm. Now, to the political apologies. A supporter of Republican Rand Paul's Senate campaign in Kentucky apologized this week for attacking a liberal activist the previous day. The campaign has dropped him as a county campaign coordinator. The Paul campaign also banned Tim Prophet from future events. He's the guy who stomped on the head of the lady. I'm sorry that it came to that, and I apologize if it appeared overly forceful, but I was concerned about Rand's safety, he said Prophet. He said the video made the confrontation appear worse than it was. Dateline Carson City, Nevada. A firm hired to program robocalls apologized for ringing up as many as 50,000 Nevadans about a ballot measure in the late night and early morning hours. Their apology was sent by another mass robocall. Company co-owner Paul Stone released an apology for the calls between midnight and 1:15 a.m. on Monday. The apology was phoned Monday afternoon to everyone who received the late-night wake-up calls. That's robomania. A Republican congresswoman shocked teachers and students alike this month when she talked about abortion in a classroom of six-year-olds. Representative Gene Schmidt, Republican of Ohio, ventured into the territory during a speech at a Cincinnati Catholic school, where she addressed a room of students ranging from first to eighth graders. Unexpectedly, towards the end of her address, Congresswoman Schmidt brought up the topic of abortion. Principal Dan Teller wrote in a letter to parents, "Your children may come home with questions, especially if this is a topic that has not been broached in your home." The principal said Schmidt was not invited to further any political agenda and apologized to parents for any confusion or fear that this may elicit on the part of your child and for the awkward position this may put you in. A Vista, California mayoral candidate has apologized to a local school district board member for mistakenly featuring her picture on a campaign mailer sent to 5,000 registered voters this week. Carol Herrera said she did not give the candidate, Chuck Rabel, permission to use her likeness and has not endorsed him. The only thing I've ever said to Mr. Rabel was, "How's your mother?" Maybe he misheard her. Dateline Washington, two different radio interviews. Republican congressional candidate Keith Finian has apologized for his comments Sunday about the mass shootings at Virginia Tech in 2007. He told one host, "I think at Virginia Tech, if one of those kids in one of those classrooms was packing heat, I think that would not have happened." At WTOP Radio, he said, "It was a horrible choice of words, and I regret it, and I apologize for it." And he repeated the apology later at WAMU. Which is public radio in Washington, which carries this broadcast on its HD 38 channel. Easy to find. Just count till you can't count anymore. Dateline. Wisconsin. Republican candidate for Wisconsin Lieutenant Governor Rebecca Clefish has issued an apology for questionable comments she made this year in a Christian talk radio show about domestic partnerships. "At what point are we going to okay marrying inanimate objects? Can I marry this table or this, you know, clock? Can we marry dogs?" she asked in the interview. "My comments were meant to relay my concern with redefining marriage. I never intended to sound insensitive and have the utmost respect for all people," Clefers said in a statement. "I apologize for my poor choice of words." New Hampshire Republican Senate hopeful Jim Bender apologized to a voter for targeting her online in his election campaign using controversial technologies from internet data firm Rapleaf Incorporated. An NBC television affiliate in Texas has apologized for airing a radio station segment asking listeners if acceptance of gay people will be the fall of America. Well, that's not political. That's media. The Maine Democratic Party has apologized for a flyer it mailed out last week that criticized independent candidate for governor Elliot Cutler. The mailers were viewed as anti-Chinese. California Democratic Senator Barbara Boxer's campaign manager, Rose Kapulsinski, says become some local social studies teacher encouraged students to volunteer. Boxer campaign volunteer coordinators notified a handful of schools near the campaign headquarters that the campaign was accepting volunteers. The letter did not ask teachers to solicit students to work on the campaign. The sole intent of the letter was to provide interested students with information about a volunteer opportunity. However, the letter, which was written by a volunteer and reviewed by a junior staffer, was inappropriate, and we apologize. The author of the letter has been counseled. The owner of Ohio McDonald's franchises has apologized for his error in judgments in telling his employees to vote Republican if they want their benefits and wages to increase. Clint McCants, who came under immense fire for anti-gay Facebook posts, is resigning from his position as vice president of the Midland, Arkansas School Board. He made the announcement on Anderson Cooper's TV show. He regretted his inflammatory post in which he said he wanted gay people to die and that he enjoyed the fact that gay people give each other AIDS and die. Why would you go on Anderson? Oh. The apologies of the week later, gentlemen, copyrighted feature of this broadcast. You know that President Obama went on a late-night television show this week to be interviewed, to connect with the youthful audience. And he was asked by the host whether he would campaign again with the same hopeful rhetoric that he did in 2008. And President Obama replied, I would say, yes, I can, but... And then the audience erupted in laughter. And then he finished, it's not going to happen overnight. So didn't take long for a well-known hip-hop artist, Well I Never, to mash that up.
We've been warned against offering people of this nation false hope.
But
here's what I think is fair. That over the last 2 years, in an emergency situation, our basic attitude was, we've got to get some things done.
But
in order to do that, basically worked with the process as opposed to transform the process. And there's no doubt that that frustrated folks. But yes, we can.
Yes, we can.
But yes, we can. But yes, we can. But yes, we can.
But
it frustrates me. I think what I would say is,
yeah,
it's not going to happen overnight.
It's not going to happen overnight.
But Larry Summers did a heck of a job. Pun intended. But, you know, I'm feeling great about where the American people are considering what we've gone through.
But
I mean, we've gone through the two toughest years of any time since the Great Depression. And in light of that, the fact that people have been resilient, that folks are still out there working and opening businesses, you know, working in the community, looking after their families, taking care of their responsibilities, that's encouraging. So there's still a lot of good stuff happening. But yes, we can.
But
yes, we can.
But
yes, we can.
But
yes, we can.
Yes, we can.
But people are frustrated. You know, a lot of folks are hurting out there still. And, you know, in that environment, I think that they're hoping that we can do a little bit better here in Washington than we've been doing.
But
yes, we can.
But
yes, we can.
But
yes, we can.
But
yes, we can.
But.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, some news from outside the bubble. Mervyn King, governor of the Bank of England, has now thrown his weight behind breaking up the banks. The governor of the Bank of England wants to break up the banks to protect taxpayers from another financial industry meltdown. He warned banks in the future must be financed much more heavily by equity than short-term debt. Addressing the option of separating investment banking from retail banking, he said, if there is a need for genuinely safe deposits, the only way they can be provided while ensuring costs and benefits are fully aligned is to insist such deposits do not coexist with risky assets. Gee, that's the way things were done here before President Clinton signed the repeal of the Glass-Steagall Act, isn't it? Yes, it is. He said such a radical measure explicitly recognizes that the pretense that risk-free deposits can be supported by risky assets is alchemy. A simple breakup would make it harder for banks to work around the rules, he said. That's from the Telegraph and from the Guardian. For those of you who haven't got enough WikiLeaks, and I think none of us has, at least in this country, here's one from the WikiLeaks files. Lack of fuel for a surveillance helicopter may have let Al-Qaeda kingpin Zarqawi go free. British troops came close to capturing Al-Qaeda's top commander and the occupation force's most wanted target in Iraq, but the operation collapsed after the only surveillance helicopter ordered to monitor him ran out of fuel and had to return to base. This is according to the WikiLeaks logs. The astonishing blunder in March 2005 allowed Zarqawi, a Jordanian associate of bin Laden, with a $25 million reward on his head, an extra 15 months to expand Al-Qaeda's operations throughout Iraq. And he didn't even say thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, news from outside the bubble, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast, the buzzle. Get outside that buzzle. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, 7.4 and 5 shortwave, on the mighty 104 in Berlin, around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archived whenever you want it, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com. Available for your smartphone through Stitcher.com and available as a free podcast from KCRW.com. And be just like the campaign commercials continuing after Election Day, if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you? Alrighty, thank you very much. Uh-huh. To the Le Show Chapeau, to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Chicago, In Exile, and Hawaii desks. And thanks, as always, to Pam Halstead. The email address for this broadcast and the playlist of music heard here on, available at harryshearer.com. Le Show is on Twitter at The Harry Shearer. Comes to you from Century Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.